There's something that happens when a team of people goes through something difficult together. They experience it. I think that's why like the Marines are so successful in their operations, is because they've got each other's back, because they know what they've gone through to get to where they are in life.
Positivity, generosity, kindness, giving, all of that type of stuff is attractive, and you attract the right people and you repel the wrong people as well.
We will. And let's all have that attitude. Let's not spread negativity and say, it's so difficult. It looks so difficult. It's going to be for us as well. Yes, we will go through that experience, but let's be positive.
Before we start this podcast, I have one small favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so that we can help more people every week? Thank you. Welcome to The Right Place. Meet Gerard Leroux. He's just a regular husband and dad here in Durbanville, but he just returned from climbing the highest mountain in South America, Aconcagua. That's 6,962 meters above sea level. Gerard, it's wonderful to talk to you today. And we actually met on Lion's Head last week, which was really exciting to meet a well-traveled mountaineer on the top of a mountain. So what's Gerard's day job, you ask? Well, he's the National Head of Capital Growth at the Connect Group, which is part of the Saka Technologies Group. And they provide retail merchants with fintech solutions that connect them to cash management, access to business funding, card payments, prepaid bill payment, products and services. So this episode is for any professional or business owner who's facing a big mountain in front of them. He wants to know how to use their roles to maximize their relationships and enhance their environment to reach their own summit. Gerard, it's wonderful to talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, John. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be here.
Excellent, Gerard. Gerard, now one does not just go to South America and climb the highest peak, Aconcagua. It's on the other side of the world in Argentina. It's very remote to get there. And then it's 6,962 meters high. When did this dream of yours become a reality and something that you were moving towards?
Yeah, so I made this daring and probably a little bit crazy decision December 2023. I needed to give myself enough time to prepare both mentally, physically, and probably financially as well, as I realized throughout the process. But I think the mindset probably happened several years ago, where I realized that in life, things happen to you that's out of your control, like sickness, financial stress, a family member maybe passing away. And yes, it's tough and it's difficult to get through it, but you've heard all of these stories of people that get through it and they are stronger in so many different ways. But what I've realized is the typical human being then gets comfortable when their life is okay, where I think you need to challenge yourself and put yourself in other uncomfortable positions that's going to let you grow further. So obviously the more daring the goal is or the challenge, the bigger the reward is. And it's not necessarily getting to the top. It's also the process of getting there in terms of training and preparations and just the mental fortitude that you build up. The dream started about in December 2023, and it was a proper 12-month planning session to actually get to the start and then just push through to try and get to the top.
Gerard, why do this now? What is there anything significant about this time in your life? You're a dad, you're a husband, you're highly successful in the business that you operate. What were you looking to get out of this personally and even professionally?
So, John, I've got this, I'm going to call it mentality, or some people might even say it's potentially a mantra, where I visualize hell not as a place where you go and burn for eternity, but actually hell for me is potentially getting to the gates of heaven. But instead of going into heaven, you meet a version of yourself you could have become if you took all the opportunities that life gave you. And yes, opportunities like climbing a mountain and doing a triathlon and all of these extreme adventures is one component that grows you in terms of your character. But as human beings, we also go down the wrong roads, whether it's substance abuse, etc. So those are also decisions that you make that you are going to regret. So imagine the sadness, the regret, and the disappointment sitting on a bench next to the best version of yourself and watching a highlight reel of what you could have become if if you just made the right decisions, took those challenges and opportunities, both in your personal life and your professional life. So I wake up every day trying to make a difference in my life that I can grow as a human being. And what I've realized is during that process, I become stronger, my network becomes stronger, and I can actually help individuals along the way to become a better version of themselves. So the reason why Mount Aconcagua was such a big bucket list goal for me is it is definitely by far the toughest thing that I've ever done, which means the reward was the biggest and the growth was the biggest out of all of the challenges I've done in the past. So there wasn't any, I'm 40, so there wasn't a, oh, I'm 40, what do I need to do? It just happened that financially and from a networking perspective, I was in the right position to take on this specific challenge at this time of my life.
No, that's excellent, Gerard. And I think it goes with that saying that you'll regret more things that you didn't do than the things that you did do. And too often you might get to heaven and like, I could have done that, I could have done this, I could have done this. And you just didn't because you were either in a comfort zone or you just fell into a bad decision trap somewhere along the way. So kudos to you for stepping up and doing this. Now, Gerard, one of your roles on this journey was as a photographer for the group. And you shared some of those photos with me. And it goes from happy, smiley Gerard on the mountain to some tough situations that you were in and you were documenting this journey for your team. How did you enjoy that role and what did your team members think of that?
Yeah, so it was fun. I mean, it wasn't at the beginning officially decided that I'm the photographer. What started to happen is as I took photos and videos, we had a WhatsApp group that we were all part of. And I started sharing some photos there. And the lead guy got quite excited. And he's like, oh, please, can I send this back to the operators? Because they would love this kind of footage just for their social media presence. And I started to enjoy that these team members of mine could see themselves in a different light. It's a photo with a different angle, maybe a black and white filter. And it adds to the kind of like essence of you in this remote country, taking on this unique challenge. And the photo, to a large extent, represents how you're feeling and the view that you're experiencing. So that was quite a lot of fun. But to get back to also why I wanted to document as much as I can, I wanted to let the followers, and I did have a WhatsApp group of about 60 close family, friends, colleagues, and just some other individuals as part of a WhatsApp group that followed my journey. I wanted to be real. I wanted them to experience what I'm experiencing as much as is possible through a WhatsApp group. And that is also the intensity. And no disrespect towards anybody out there that has done these type of challenges, but you can't window dress. Because people then go and do some of these challenges themselves and like, oh, but this guy said it was easy and I'm trying it, but it's not that easy. So let's be real. And what I love about being real is people are experiencing the toughness with you and how difficult it is. And the fact that you then get through it, even though it was so difficult, I think they appreciate and then they can relate and say, okay, well, I'm not expecting whatever challenge I'm going to take to be easy, but at least here's an example of somebody that just pushed through, just took one step at a time, got to the top. As uncomfortable as it was, the reward was worth it. So I think we need to be a lot more sincere in our social media presence rather than in window dress and make it look like everything is good or.
No, I 100% agree with you. And just to share that it isn't just a gentle stroll along the beach to the top. There's a lot of thought that goes into every single day and every single moment. And also then for you to have that interaction and that encouragement from the team. I mean, that's really important. I mean, you're doing this for yourself, but you're also doing this for your family and friends. And talking about your family, you had to leave your husband, your wife, Christine, behind and your two children. How did you prepare them that dad's going away for 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think to some extent they are used to their dad doing crazy stuff. This is the longest I've been away from home, so that definitely added an element that they were not used to. But I must admit, the encouragement and the support from them was amazing. When there was about 100 days to go for me to leave South Africa, kids made these countdown notes, and which they stuck against the wall. So on the one side of our house, it was just looks like, I don't know, like a Smarty box, 100, 99, 98, 97. So the ritual was every morning I needed to pull a number down. And that actually added to the excitement. And yes, there were probably a few tears when I left South Africa to go on the trip. But it was also excitement because they knew how much effort I put into this and that they were going to be part of the journey, even though it's through a WhatsApp group. I think it strengthened our family. And I'm hoping that it gives my kids an example that anything is possible if you put effort and put your mind behind it. And I'm hoping that that's an example that they can one day use to their advantage as well.
No, excellent, Gerard. I think it is a wonderful example for the dad to go and do something crazy but cool. And also, I mean, I always believe it's good for your kids to miss you. They sometimes get in the comfort zone. Dad's there, he's helping out, doing this and that. But you don't know what you've got until it's gone or just temporarily out of the country. So I think that's a wonderful example. But that wasn't the only thing you left behind. You left behind your role as National Head of Capital Growth at the Connect Group for this period of 2 or 3 weeks to go climb Aconcagua. What does that show you about your colleagues, that they were able to just carry on with the business and keep the ship afloat?
Yeah, so that was and it's actually ironic because I really love what I do. We've actually been busy with a new division for the last 12 months, trying to assist fuel retailers in South Africa with financial technology that then can help their business in various ways. So there was actually some FOMO from my side because we're in a period in the growth of the business that a lot of exciting things are happening. So it was very difficult to not go into my email inbox or into Slack to just kind of like see what chatter is happening. But what was quite rewarding and reassuring is when I got back, it's not just that things were fine. Things actually carried on and progressed, which is great. You don't ever want to be an individual that when you're not there, things stand still. You want to empower your colleagues so that they can just carry on and flourish. And I think that's also a value that we share within the group, is to make sure that any individual can stand in for you for a certain period of time and the process of business carries on. So that was quite nice to come back and also to see that my inbox was actually not that crazy, which is sometimes I know when people go and leave and they come back, it's probably 2 days of just getting through the email backlog.
Gerard, that's well planned then as well. And I'm sure they also had some FOMO on their side that they weren't on the mountain with you. Now, during your climb of Aconcagua, you were led by a guide, someone you have to put a lot of trust in right from the get-go. And you might have had some contact with them before the time, but you get to South America, get to Argentina, and now you've got to trust somebody. And you've got to trust them that you might know a lot about climbing and everything, but this guy's the boss van die plaas, if I can use that South African term. And he knows the area and everything. Tell me about building that relationship with your guide and any stories around that.
Yeah, so we were all really comfortable and actually impressed with their repertoire, their climbing record, that's the right term to use. So the lead guide, Andy, has successfully summited at Mount Aconcagua 5 times. The local guide more than 30 times. So these individuals came with a lot of experience. So we were comfortable from day one. But there's obviously characters and personalities that you need to uncover. And there's always unwritten ground rules that you establish as you go through the process. But it was just amazing, not just with the guides, but also the company we used. The admin in the background was seamless, which also gave us a lot of comfort. Things went according to plan and timing. We never were in a position that we did not know what's going to happen. But then as soon as we started hiking or going up the mountain, it was always the local guide in front because he knew the best route. And then the main guide, Andy, always right back. He would not let anybody fall behind. And that gave us that assurance. And what was quite prevalent as we started engaging at the different camps, because then you've got time to sit around a table, maybe have a beer or a glass of Malbec red wine. It's quite popular in that area. Then you start to learn and experience the individual. And both Andy and Diego, the local guide, cool, calm, collected, always happy to explain anything in as much detail as is necessary, pushed us when we needed it, because it helps with acclimatization and adapting to the environment, but also very quickly saying, okay, you're feeling a little bit tired, let's take it easy, let's maybe sleep half an hour longer, let's try and leave earlier so we'll be back earlier and you can take an afternoon nap. So all of these small tweaks, I think, definitely assisted us, and also believe that's why we had such a big success rate in terms of the number of team members that eventually summoned this successfully.
No, that's fantastic to hear. And then you also had to build relationships with people from around the world. You had some climbers younger than you, some climbers older than you. What can you tell us about that process of getting to know the people on this incredible adventure?
Oh, this is always the fun part. And why I'm saying this with a little bit of experience, I did Mount Kilimanjaro about 15 years ago, and it was with three other people, also from different countries around the world. And although it's 15 years ago, I can see each of those individuals' faces in front of me as it is yesterday. There's something that happens when a team of people goes through something difficult together. They're experiencing, I think that's why like the Marines are so successful in their operations, is because they've got each other's back, because they know what they've gone through to get to where they are in life. So I was expecting the same experience with Mount Aconcagua, but what was interesting with this group of individuals, we had two from Scotland, there was four people from the UK, one from America, and then myself from South Africa, is these are everyday average Joes and Janes. These are not mountaineers that's trying to climb the seven summits, and they've got this repertoire of mountains that they've successfully conquered. They were a bookkeeper, a salesperson. There was actually ironically two firefighters, one from the UK and one from America. But they all just wanted to do something that they've never done before, experience another country along with other individuals. And maybe that was also part of the success, because nobody had this expectation. They weren't married to the idea to get to the top. If that happens, it would be great. But just the experience of going through this and getting even to base camp, or one peak we summited was Bonete Peak, 5,000 meters. That was already an amazing journey. Journey on the top is getting to the summit, which luckily eventually happened for six of us. But we very quickly grew great relationships. We had to sleep in tents of two people each. So me and my one tent partner got very close, not sleeping in the same sleeping bag close, but definitely sharing as much as we can to get each other through this difficult adventure.
And now on this journey to the summit, you're walking in a group, but you're also spending a lot of time alone. You're spending hours on a trail, one foot in front of the other. What's going through your mind? Did you have some low points, some high points? Were you questioning, why on earth am I doing this? How did that relationship with yourself develop over the journey?
Yeah, it's definitely a flood of emotions. You start off relatively flat, hiking slowly and gradually uphill. So a lot of excitement, you're still fresh, your backpack is not that heavy yet, and you are visualizing getting to the top. You are visualizing greeting your family back at the airport after a successful summit. So these are things that excites you and helps you to move forward. In my case as well, supporting a non-profit through the process as well, excited about getting to the top and raising additional funds for them. So you visualize these successes or gratitude moments that gets you one step closer. But that very quickly changes once you get past base camp, where the intensity, the weight of the backpack, the environment in terms of the altitude and the temperature just changes rapidly in seconds. And then it becomes the pain cave. Now, for those of you that has ever been in a pain cave, triathlons and marathons, you get to a point where your body is literally saying, what the hell are you doing to me? And that's where the mental strength comes through. And the only thing I then do is keep my head down, because looking up to try and see how far I still need to go is extremely demotivating. You literally put one step in front of the other. And then I had a highlights reel of about five moments playing in my head. One moment was, yes, hugging my family and celebrating the success. The other moment is back at the hotel after a successful summit, eating a piece of steak and having a glass of red wine. So you've got these highlights reels of what can be possible if you just put another step in front of yourself and just try and push through this difficult period.
No, well done. I think you need to have that. You need to have some sort of mental preparation that it's going to get tough. This isn't a walk in the park. And what is my go-to? Is my go-to super negative, or is my go-to being realistic and just keeping the bigger picture in my mind? I'm doing this for me. I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this to return safely. Now, Gerard, during this process and building these relationships with your guides and your other team members there, are there any applications from that you think could apply to your normal day job, working with SMEs, helping business owners raise capital?
Yeah, for sure. Another big benefit of these big area audacious goals, or BAG, as some people call them, is getting into that uncomfortable zone. And what happens in an uncomfortable zone is you need to be proactive, nimble, and adapt to whatever is happening around you. And that doesn't just happen while you are hiking or trekking. It actually happens inside the tent. It happens when the weather turns and you know you need to walk 500 meters to the toilet in snowy, windy weather. You need to plan what you're going to pack the next morning. So continuously, whilst it might feel like you're on holiday or just relaxing, in your mind, you are processing what you're busy going through, what's going to happen next, what's going to happen tomorrow morning. Did I drink enough water? How's my headaches? Tomorrow we're going at a higher altitude. Am I eating enough? Is the color of my wee the right color? Because that's very important, because you need to keep on hydrating. So you're continuously processing a lot of information. Are you taking like I took iron supplements as an example, omega-3 supplements. Did you take that this morning? Are you dressed correctly in terms of the weather? Because you don't want to start with your long johns and then you get too hot. And then there's no real place to take it off and then put other clothes on. So you're continuously assessing. And I think that's what happens with any business owner, is you are continuously assessing what's happening. Did I place my orders? I've got a new supplier coming. Hopefully I can get better pricing from him. Oh, I've got this CCMA case that's happening next week that I need to prepare for. There's an increase happening in the fuel next week. I need to plan for that. Continuously, you're assessing everything around you. So if you can get comfortable with kind of like operating in that environment, it doesn't get easier. You just are able to handle it much better. It's like doing anything. The more you practice, the better you get at it. So pushing yourself into these uncomfortable positions definitely, I think, helps you with everyday life, whether that's business or in your personal life.
No, I think that's wonderful advice, Gerard. And now looking at the rest of 2025, what relationships do you think business owners should focus on? What should they be dialing in on to ensure that they can maximize the growth of their business in 2025?
We're in a period where technology is available and pricing on most solutions are actually coming down. But one thing that has taken a step back is customer service. And that sounds like a very generic word or phrase to use, but it's actually a relationship. I think over the last few years, it became a client and supplier transaction rather than a relationship. So I would urge business owners to look at their suppliers where there's an actual meaningful relationship, where you have an individual's cell phone number. They actually answer when you phone them. They visit you once a week or at least once every 2 weeks, depending on where you are in the country. And the supplier or the service provider needs to really understand your business. I think that's what we try and do, is we put ourselves in the shoe of the retailer. We experience what they go through on a daily basis on site, their business, not somewhere in a boardroom where you imagine what they're experiencing. And business owners need to look for those suppliers. And we are, as business owners, they are spoiled for choice these days because there are so many individuals and startups that's trying to give a service that's already there, but give it at a better price or add features that wasn't there before. And it's important, but that customer service element is, I think, what's going to make certain suppliers excel, and not just this year, but in the coming years, obviously backed by a great product and service, but with technology as well, but definitely having a meaningful relationship with the clients.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think oftentimes a business, the only relationship they have with their customers is when they send them the monthly invoice or the quarterly invoice. And that's not a good position to be in. The more communication you have with your service providers, but also your customers, the better you learn to understand them. You hear things, you see things, you can solve different problems for them. And that's all part of client retention. Client retention doesn't just start when the contract comes to an end or something. It should be a daily, weekly, monthly habit that you can talk to the customers, hear what's going on, hear what's working, what's not working, and solve it then. Don't wait until the end to try and unpack what went right, what went wrong. And too often, I think we're so focused on accumulating clients, and then we don't serve the clients that we actually have. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100% correct. And I think it was Bill Gates that said he loves complexity. So if you are in a position where you've got a great relationship with your clients, you are actually listening to what they're saying, not thinking what you're going to sell them next. You can actually learn and experience their frustrations and their pain points. And although some service providers has a specific function that they fulfill in their business, if you listen to what the business owner is struggling with, it's potentially an opportunity. And you can potentially add a division or a feature to your current product that you can meet that need. Because I promise you, 9 times out of 10, what the one business owner is experiencing is frustration. There's thousands of others that's got a similar situation. So we love complexity. We thrive in it. And you can only really understand what those pain points are is when you are listening to the business owner rather than planning what you're going to cross-sell and upsell. And ironically, that gives you more client acquisition because now that business owner becomes your salesperson or your spokesperson. You don't have to necessarily run around trying to sell your product or service because you're actually providing such a great service to one that that person tells to other people. And obviously, the process continues. You will scale organically very fast just by doing what we're doing in the best possible way.
And I think that's got such a good example there. Now, Gerard, let's go back to Aconcagua and let's talk about the environment around it. When you got to base camp and you could see maybe a little bit of the top of the summit there, was there anything that surprised you about the landscape or that you started getting worried about?
So the two elements that I knew I was not equipped to handle was the temperature, the cold, as well as the altitude. Obviously, limited exposure to those two components in Cape Town. So when we reached base camp, which is 4,300 meters, and to put that into perspective, the highest point in South Africa is Drakensberg at around about 3,400. So you're already about 1,000 meters higher than the highest point in South Africa. You're already starting to experience changes in your body, definitely struggling to breathe. It's a really, I don't know how a panic attack feels like, but if I had to guess, it's quite close to that. You just can't catch your breath. Doesn't matter how hard you try. So that already started to play a role. And then when you put your head up and you look at where you think the summit is, because it's still quite a distance to go from there, every half an hour you look at the summit, the weather changes. There's clouds, there's snow, it's sunny. So you very quickly realized how potentially small the summit gap might even be. And that's, you still need to get there, and then you need to hope and pray that the weather is going to work in your favor. So it definitely starts playing mind tricks on you. But what happened was I had the mentality, and I started to share and vocalize that with my team, even when we were still in Mendoza on our way to the mountain, is let's be positive. So there's a difference between being cocky and positive. I believe in voicing positivity and the universe response to your attitude to life. And I just said, we are going to have a great summit. We will. And let's all have that attitude. Let's not spread negativity and say, oh, yes, it's so difficult. It looks so difficult. It's going to be for us as well. Yes, we will go through that experience, but let's be positive. And I don't know, you obviously saw the photos and videos at the top. We couldn't have been blessed with better weather. And ironically, when we came down 2 days later, the top of the mountain was closed 4 days because of bad weather. So I think it counts for something to have a positive attitude in life.
No, exactly. I think you attract what you put out there. And I firmly believe this, and it's not supernatural or necessarily a religious thing. I just think it's the way the universe works. The universe conspires in your favor, based on what you put in out, positivity, generosity, kindness, giving, all of that type of stuff is attractive, and you attract the right people and you repel the wrong people as well. Now, Gerard, let's talk about getting to the summit there. Does that just accelerate the entire journey? You've gone through a year of preparation. You've taken 10 or so days to climb to the top. And then suddenly the summit's in front of you. This is it. This is all coming to this point in your journey. Tell us about getting to the top and then just being on the top. What was going through your mind?
Yeah, so the toughest day in my life was the summit day. We woke up at 3 o'clock, started the trek at 5 in the morning. That's after a night of no sleep. And I know sometimes people say they didn't sleep at all, but maybe you had a couple of 10-minute sessions throughout the night, but I literally did not sleep. Not just because of the altitude and the cold, also because of the wind. So if the wind blows that tent, it literally sounds like somebody's trying to break in. So even when it feels like you might doze off, all of a sudden it sounds like a hurricane hitting you. So then you awake again, but also you're quite excited for the day that's going to happen with the summit attempt. So there's all of these emotions going through your head. So started with like no sleep, minus 22 degrees when we woke up. Then when the wind obviously blows, that wind chill can take the temperature close to minus 50. The first rest stop that we had about an hour into the hike, I realized that there was something underneath my nose and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I took my phone out and I put the camera on and I had this big, which I can't explain in another way than a big snot ice ball that as my nose was dripping was forming and there wasn't even time for the snot to fall. I couldn't get it off because it was frozen to my mustache and I had to find a way of just kind of like melting it, my buff. Which was quite funny. And none of my team members told me about it, not because they were worried that I'm going to be ashamed. It's just they were in their own world. They were struggling to get one foot in front of the other. So that was quite an interesting experience. But yes, it was extremely tough. To give you an idea, from the last camp, which is Camp 3, to summit is about 1.5 kilometers. It took us 8 hours to get there. So that just gives you an idea of how slowly you are walking, not because you are pacing yourself. That's just your top speed. And you literally take about 3 or 4 seconds to take one step. It's also extremely dangerous because, yes, it's a trek. There's not ropes and stuff like that. But if you do misstep, you start sliding. And we've got ice axes as a way of securing ourselves if something happens. But again, you're tired, so you're focusing. But as the sun comes out, that's a very enlightening experience. And as you get closer to the top, that idea of that you might be successful starts to grow inside you, and it does push you forward. When we got right to the top, the first couple of moments, we just all laid down and basked in this amazing journey that we've been through. You really then go into overdrive mode by making sure that you get your pictures through pictures and videos as much as you can because you don't want to stay there too long. And it's not a switch that happens that now you reach the top and all of a sudden you're a better version of yourself. For me personally, that happens on the way down. on the way down, you're actually experiencing the environment. Because on the way up, you were head down, looking at your feet, one foot in front of the other. But on the way down, you can actually start looking around you and experience this. And now all of those highlights reels of seeing your family at the airport, eating that steak and drinking that glass of Malbec and handing the check over to the NPO. Now you are actually visualizing it and it's a reality. It's going to happen. Obviously, you still need to safely get down, but that starts to sink in. Then you start to reflect on what you've actually achieved, not just actual summit, but how much time and effort the last 12 months you've put in to get to this point. And gradually, that's where this new version of yourself starts igniting or switching on inside you. And that's something that you need to experience. You can't really explain it. But yeah, it was a really tough day, but worth every single step of sweat, blood, and tears that I took.
No, well done, Gerard. I mean, to go through such an amazing experience, you come back as a different person. And talking about the comeback, I mean, what goes up must come down. It's still a lot of hard work to get back to base camp, to get back to Mendoza, fly to South Africa. Tell me about that journey coming back, because you're now on the top of South America, still very far from home. What was that journey like?
Yeah, so initially we all made jokes of we were hoping that there was these big plastic bubbles at the top that you zip open, climb in, close the zip, and then just roll down, which I think some of us would have definitely opted for. But you're 100% correct. When it came to blisters, the first blisters we all experienced was on the way down. I mean, you're carrying a 20-kilogram backpack. You are wearing about 6, 7, 8 kilograms worth of gear. You're going down at a very steep angle, so you can imagine that pressure or intensity on your feet, because that get pushed forward every time. We were still wearing crampons, which obviously is like spikes that secures you on the ice or snow to make sure that you don't slip. So those blisters form very quickly, but you, at that point, obviously you've got no choice. But besides that, you are imagining getting down to base camp and having amazing food and just good night's rest. So that helps you to get through it. At base camp, you start to plan your exit strategy the next day. There's still another 26 kilometers of trekking out to the park entrance. That was actually a little bit of fun. Like you said at the beginning, I'm not the oldest, but I'm also not the youngest in the group. So I wanted to give the two youngsters a little bit of a run for their money, see if my trail running was still up to scratch. And I must admit, I did leave them in the dust. That got us to the last camp quite quickly, where we enjoyed a couple of beers while we were waiting for the rest of the team. But that just added to the excitement of actually finishing the actual hike. It's another 3-hour drive from the park entrance to Mendoza. We got back to the hotel, just threw our bags down, had something to eat quickly, and then just passed out. The next day was all about getting ready for the trip back, but then also planning the celebratory dinner, which happened that evening with a platter of any kind of steak that you can imagine. That's what Mendoza is quite known for, with some good red wine. And that was a great experience, topped off with actual original Argentinian ice cream at one of the stores around the corner. And yeah, then the trip back was trying to sleep as much as I can on the plane and just looking forward to that moment of my kids running into my arms and hugging me for the first time in almost 3.5 weeks, which was an amazing feeling.
No, well done, Gerard. That's amazing. And it's probably the best steak and best glass of red wine you've ever had. And you can actually deserve it. Like, you thoroughly deserve it to celebrate and to have a bit of a closing moment with the team. I mean, you've just done something absolutely incredible that not even 1% of the population on Earth will ever get to do. And to have a proper closeout session, share stories, laugh, and that everyone made it safe and sound. I mean, that's really, really excellent. And now thinking back, I mean, you've been back in South Africa now a couple of weeks. Would you recommend Aconcagua as a worthwhile adventure for someone to add to their bucket list?
Yeah, for sure. Depending on what you've done previously, it might not be the best first option. I would recommend if climbing a mountain is something that you definitely want to put on your bucket list. Maybe Kilimanjaro as a first port of call, and then Aconcagua is maybe a wiser option. And just to be fair, I mean, the one youngster, 20-year-old American firefighter, he never climbed a mountain in his life, and he summited Mount Aconcagua successful. So depending on your fitness, your makeup in terms of altitude adaptation and these type of things, it's not impossible. But personally, I would do Kilimanjaro first. So it's definitely an amazing experience. The operator we use, Jagged Globe, they do multiple adventures in terms of intensity, altitude, mountain skiing. There's quite a lot of adventures. So that, yes, depending on your background, just start cautiously, but don't shy away from putting yourself in an uncomfortable position, and you'll very soon realize how much you actually capable of doing. And I promise you, those bucket list items are contagious, and the intensity or the extremeness of it will just increase over time as you get used to this this reward of finding a new version of yourself when you get through some of these challenges.
No, that's wonderful to hear, Gerard. Now, Gerard, you're involved with an NPO back here in Durbanville side in Visanterkraal, and it's called For the Long Run South Africa. Something very close to your heart. You're an avid runner, trail runner as well. Tell us about that NPO and the impact that it's had in the Visanterkraal community.
So I think I mentioned it earlier. My life as an adventurer started several years ago. I went through a tough divorce about 10 years back, and one of my bucket list items, besides financial freedom and getting my own place again and spending more time with my kids, was to run a marathon. And it's probably one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life, because that journey of getting running fit and eventually running a marathon, it helped me to deal with a lot of things that happened in my past, and just kind of like do a self-reflection on a daily basis through these 5Ks or 10K runs, depending on what training involved. Now, to cut a long story short, that process helped me to not just get myself back, but start unlocking versions of myself that I did not know existed. So when I met my current wife, we've now been married for 4 years, she went through a similar bad divorce also about several years ago. And we both agreed that running helped us to get our life back and get a better life. So we wanted to give this experience back to other individuals that are not always in the position financially to do it. And we identified Visanterkraal, because it's quite close to where we live, just outside of Durbanville. So logistically, it will be easier to support that community. And the idea was simple. An average runner replaces their shoes every 6 to 8 months, but there's still a few hundred kilometers of running left on those shoes. So a runner that's in a financially better position can donate those shoes to our NPO. We put it on the feet of an individual in Visanterkraal, and then every Sunday morning we meet with them and we take them for runs. And then they work towards big goals like Two Oceans, Comrades. We also do the Wineland Marathon on a yearly basis. And the idea is not just to let them experience a race like this and get a medal at the end. It's to let them see that there's a whole other world out there. During these races, they are running next to CEOs, next to doctors, and they actually feel like, okay, well, during this race, we are equals. I'm actually running past this probably very wealthy individual. But I'm just from Visanterkraal, and I'm actually running really fast, and I'm actually getting a silver. And just to see that experience that they go through is extremely rewarding. And some of these individuals have gone on to secure really good positions. The one is working at Virgin Active, and he's busy studying to become a personal trainer. And I'm not saying that it was just our NPO that led him to that. He obviously had the right mindset of not letting his circumstances dictate his future. But we feel that we played a role in letting them see that there's a bigger world out there. Unfortunately, some of the individuals, you do lose to the gangs in the community. We don't then try and get involved because that's quite a different kettle of fish to try and circumvent. But they all know that we are there every Sunday, and they're more than happy to come back whenever they feel they want to.
No, that's wonderful. I think it's a wonderful example of helping people with something that has helped yourself, and teaching them about the law of running, as Tim Noakes calls it. Now, Gerard, if someone wants to get involved or donate or support for the Long Run South Africa in any way, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, so you can get hold of us. Probably Facebook is the platform that we're most active. You can just search for the Long Run. If you've got any secondhand running shoes or even running clothes, we'll definitely be welcome. There's always some feet that, that needs them. We are quite privileged. There's a few angel investors that have seen what we are doing, and they are contributing to us on a yearly basis. And that's predominantly for like snacks during our Sunday runs. We do get a lot of support from organizations or companies like Sports. So they also give us shoes once or twice throughout the year. They also give us free entries to Oceans because they sponsor that event. You can get involved in any way that you feel is going to add value. And if that means that you just come for a run in Santegraal one Sunday morning and experience the group for yourself, that would be great. I would just like to warn you that these guys and girls are really fast. So if you're coming there with an attitude of giving them a run for their money, just be prepared.
Excellent, Gerard. Thank you so much. Gerard, it's been a few weeks since you got back. Would you say that this journey to Aconcagua, to South America, brought you closer to your right place?
Yes, in more ways than one. You have an idea that going through something like this is going to unlock a new version of yourself, especially if you've got a history of doing daring adventures. But we don't appreciate, or I don't think we always expect, the impact it is going to have. And not just in ourselves, what we've gone through, but also what it meant for people around us. And the words of encouragement and congratulations afterwards adds to also why I've done this. I think some people, this experience of going through this with me has potentially helped them take that next step, take on a daring adventure. So that's also quite a rewarding feeling that I play a small part in potentially helping somebody to say, okay, well, I'm going to get off the couch and my goal is to actually do a park run in the next few weeks and not stop once, just run the whole 5K. So these are, for some people, a massive mountain. And if I can play a small part in igniting that fire, what a pleasure to have the privilege to do that.
No, I think that's a wonderful testimony to getting out of your comfort zone. And it just might lead you to a new direction, a new path, and you'll thank yourself one day for doing that. Gerard, this has been a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for sharing your story of your successful summit to Aconcagua in Argentina, and also some of your business insights with us. If people want to learn more about you, about the Connect Group, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
So I'm on most social media channels, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, probably the most active on LinkedIn. So please reach out to me there, and you'll be able to find links to our websites and everything else that we do through those channels.
Excellent, Gerard. Ladies and gentlemen, please connect with Gerard Le Roux. Please also check out www.connected.co.za. Subscribe to the Right Place podcast. And please share this episode with your connections, especially those who are adventurous or runners. Please support For the Long Run South Africa as well. Gerard, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, John.
Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next time at the Right Place.